The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Now, we're introducing a new feature on Late Debate where we take a breather from the debate to delve a little deeper into political moments and matters. It could be that election or that scandal or that moment of madness that we're still talking about. So do let us know if you have a political event or moment that you would like to hear dissected and discussed in this slot. Tonight, we're all about something that all of us political anoraks can't get enough of, and that is polling. How it started, its triumphs, its failures, where it's at now. And to discuss that, we have Kevin Cunningham, political lecturer in TU Dublin and MD of the polling company Ireland Thinks. Kevin, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Kate.
Before we get into the history of this, just give us, what are the polls telling us right now of the state of the parties here?
Yeah, so over the past 2 months, there have been six opinion polls. And just in terms of the bigger three parties, because I think they're the more interesting, really, because the smaller parties are only really bobbing around. But the big three parties...
You're going to have to make apologies to Breed Smith now.
Sorry,
as you go.
Yeah.
As you...
But Fine Gael are on 33 on average across those polls. Sinn Féin on 29 and Fianna Fáil 15. But if you take into account that in any given period, some opinion polling companies are operating and some aren't, and there are differences between, particularly around Fianna Fáil, some have Fianna Fáil relatively higher and some have them much lower. So if you're to try to weight and kind of average that out to know that, you know, some polling companies are better and worse for different parties, then it would put Sinn Féin at 29.5 and slightly ahead of Fine Gael on 29 and Fianna Fáil up at 17.5. So they're really neck and neck, the two bigger parties, with Fianna Fáil a third party. When we look at this in terms of a general election, because I think that's always the important thing to do, those figures which suggest, you know, Sinn Féin would get 50 seats, Fine Gael would get 49, and Fianna Fáil 28.
Wow.
What is interesting about that is, I think if you go into another election, the clear questions are, the presumption has to be that one of those two larger parties would lead the next government. And then the questions are on all the other parties of how do they resolve that issue? How do they navigate what is essentially a kind of an increased polarisation within the public?
Yeah, but of course, all that presumes that the polls are right.
Yeah.
And that is a very big bone of contention within the polling world, is it not? No, before we go there.
Okay, yeah.
with the hard questions. Yeah. Take me back to the beginning of polling.
Okay.
Where did it start?
So, yeah, it started, I mean, it was really in the United States. And it's funny how, you know, when the 2020 election was being covered, we were all glued on the numbers. And that's really where it's all originated in the 19th century, where newspapers locally in Pennsylvania and North Carolina, still swing states today, were conducting local polls and straw polls of people in their local areas. That's how it started, until one magazine in particular, the Literary Digest, started to do this on a national scale. And what they were doing was they identified phone books and big books of members' association to try and get as many addresses of people they could possible. And they would send letters out to all these people, partly to try to boost their readership, let's be honest, right? But they would do that repeatedly, and they got the election right 5 times in a row in doing this. And they were very successful, in fact.
So they literally just wrote to random people that they harvested these addresses and asked them to write back and
about
say
how they were going to vote. And then they just counted them as they came back. And this worked for a while. And remember, the world and countries have become less homogenous. There's, you know, different groups of people in society and they act quite differently. This kind of started to, quite famously, and it led to the total collapse of the Literary Digest itself, one of the biggest magazines in the United States, when in one election they mailed out 10 million people and got 2.3 million returns. It was the 1932 general election. And this is really the interesting one in terms of polling, in that they had 2.3 million people. They thought there was going to be a landslide for a candidate called Alf Landon, and instead it was actually Teddy Roosevelt who won. What happened at the same time was there was a small polling company, which we now know is a big polling company, called Gallup, by a guy called George Gallup, who had a much smaller sample, but based his method on what we think of now as a, you know, representative sample. He basically had quotas. He said, OK, I'm going to make sure that I have this certain amount of men, certain amount of women, certain amount of people age under 40, over 40, and so on. And he successfully predicted the Teddy Roosevelt election. And that was that was a big thing in polling. So it was a movement towards, right, we need to focus more, not just on how many people were asking the question, but actually
the type of people that, we asked.
Yeah,
and how do we get to that number? Because we see in all, most reputable polls, the, it's about 1,000. That's what's considered the figure that we, from which we can extrapolate what the whole country thinks.
Yeah, so that comes from sampling theory and statistics and, you know, statistics that would involve measuring anything. Of when you get to 1,000, it's called the normal... the normal distribution, where you're the central limit theorem. Sorry, where as, when you get to a certain number of people, the numbers gravitate towards the national figure or whatever, and you only need about 1,000 to get an estimate of plus or minus 3% on a national poll. Now, that kind of plus or minus 3% is only part of the source of error. Essentially, when you're conducting an opinion poll, there's a number of different things that can go wrong. First, we have to assume that the people that we ask are representative of the people as a whole. The second bit is we want to make sure that those that respond are reflective of the broader public.
So the thing you'd see here then is, say, if you are still conducting a poll the old-fashioned way by ringing people's landlines, you are then excluding a lot of people who now no longer have landlines and only use their mobile.
Precisely. Yeah. And in fact, just as an aside, that's one of the issues why state-level polling in the United States is relatively weak, because they have to rely on landlines, because they don't know the mobile numbers of people residing in an individual state, because mobile numbers are at a national level. You know, we know that here. Obviously.
Oh, they're not. Yeah, they're not geographically.
So they have to rely on quite a lot more landlines, basically.
And what do we do here?
So we different polling companies do a mix of landline and mobile numbers, but obviously mobile numbers, every 08, some whatever number, will find an Irish person on the other end. So you kind of have a bit more to play with from that perspective.
Go on.
I was just going to say, the next bit in that, like, there's this series of different areas. The next bit is obviously whether people are going to
tell you the truth,
tell you the right thing, right? And then the last bit is whether what they tell you is what they're going to actually do. The tell you the right thing is notoriously the shy Tory or shy Brexit or whatever. There doesn't seem to be much evidence for this, which might surprise people, but this has been something that polling companies and research agencies have looked into in great detail, and there isn't really that level of difference, especially with the kind of new online polling, where there isn't really someone facing you at the other end for which you might think that you need to give an appropriate answer.
Speaking of not giving appropriate answers, apparently it was FDR, not Teddy Roosevelt, that won against Landon.
Sorry,
according
the Teddy Roosevelt
Brian
one
in the
was,
yes, anyway,
a different one, yeah.
I just to stop the text coming in on that one. Okay, so things can go wrong with polls, obviously, and they have spectacularly in some recent polls. I think we have a clip of the announcement in the early hours of the morning of the Brexit vote from, this is David Dembleby.
Well, at 20 minutes to five, we can now say the decision taken in 1975 by this country to join the common market has been reversed by this referendum to leave the EU. We are absolutely clear now that there is no way that the Remain side can win. It looks as though the gap's going to be something like 52 to 48, so a four-point lead.
Even now, 4 years on, it's still quite a shocking announcement. But it was especially shocking that night because we were not expecting that. And in the same way as we were not expecting the Trump win. Yeah. And we were not expecting the last Tory victory to the degree.
Yeah, there's two features of the Brexit one in particular. In the first case, the difference between the polls and the result was slightly narrower for the online polling companies, which had sculpted basically subsets of the electorate that they thought were representative. So the difference was slightly narrower there. And that's what led to a lot of British polling companies to just ditch the telephone polling in particular. But the margin of error on that particular one was around 4%. Now, there was a study done by Will Jennings and Chris Valesian looking at 350 elections, historically speaking, to try to understand to what extent had polls got better or worse over time. To what extent is this a reality? What they found was that the polls have actually got slightly better over time.
Really?
Which might surprise people. Yeah, so it's only slightly, but it's a very narrowly better. One thing when you look at that data, though, is that the errors are bigger, naturally, because I mentioned these other sources of error. then that kind of plus or minus 3%. Effectively, for all intents and purposes, the plus or minus 3% is actually about plus or minus 4.3%. So it's actually a little bit bigger. So 95% of the time, the polls are getting it within plus or minus 4.3. And remember,
but that is actually, in reality, can be quite a big margin. It can.
Yeah, and in an American election.
So is it the interpretation of polls that is actually leading us astray to some degree, rather than the actual numbers?
There is some of that. I mean, if you remember, there was never really any reaction to the marriage equality referendum. So in that particular referendum, the result was, as expected, a landslide in favour of the yes vote. But the polls are out by about 9% on average there. And the polls in the Brexit referendum were out by about 4%, which is about average for where polls are typically out. One of the things about the Trump one was that we were relying on state-level polls, and those state-level polls aren't very good. And it's in very specific areas that he did relatively well. Whereas if you look at the national-level polling in the United States, it was pretty much bang on. And in fact, on this occasion, the exit poll in the US had Biden 4.3 ahead, and he's now 4.5% ahead. Mm-hmm. So those polls aren't very far off.
Okay, and I'm just conscious I could talk for another hour about this, but I can't. Before we leave it, are polls dangerous in some ways, politically, to democracy, I mean, in terms of possibly... hang on, I'll ask Lisa this, because she's nodding right now. Do you believe polls can shift... votes basically ahead of an election?
I do, and I'd actually be in favour of banning the publication of polls, maybe even in the 2 weeks prior to polling. I think they are sometimes self-fulfilling prophecies. People like to back a winner. If you're told the person or the party you're backing is on the slide, sometimes it can actually accelerate that downfall.
Well, you can also galvanise support.
It can, but it shouldn't do anything like that. It shouldn't influence the electoral process. So my point is that I think it does. And that's just anecdotally from talking to people, on campaign teams. When you're in the middle of an election, it does have an impact, and we do devour them during that period. I think there should be a free space before polling, whatever that would be. I'm just suggesting 2 weeks, but I do think they do impact the electoral process, and I don't think they shouldn't. I think they shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously all TDs are programmed to say, when we ask about a poll, when their party is looking poor in a poll, that, it's just a snapshot. The only poll you're interested in is the one on election day. But they do have a major impact on morale in parties, and on, I assume, even policies, because parties respond to these polls.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it goes without saying, when you're doing well in a poll, it's good, and it brings good momentum. People are positive, and I think there's no doubt about that. But I don't know how much the ordinary Joe Soap really reads into polls, even at election time. I mean, parties can be doing well nationally. It might not be reflected in individual constituencies, and I'm not sure how much people necessarily read into them, and particularly at times like this, when we're perhaps so far out, or supposedly so far out from an election, perhaps nearer to the time it does. But I'm just not sure how much people on the ground read into polls in general.
Kevin, last word.
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of banning polls before the election, I have to say I wouldn't agree. But in general, I think there is a bandwagon.
You are a
effect.
Polling company, yeah, so
well,
come
no,
on.
I just to be clear, like I'm very critical of public opinion polling, and have been so in Britain in particular, because there's a dynamic here which is slightly different to what happens in Britain, where in some countries there's an argument that politicians are quite out of touch with what the general public feel, and politicians are quite limited in terms of how much they can hear about the general public. In other circumstances, I think Britain has gone the other way. In fact, they're responding too much to opinion polling and not reflecting the fact that they are representatives that are there to actually make decisions themselves. So they're being led by the polls a little bit too much. Here, I would argue, in some respect, the politicians are sometimes a little bit out of touch, in that it took quite a long time for, say, the Eighth Amendment to be passed, even though the opinion polls quite clearly showed for quite a long time that there was support for this. So I think in some respect, politicians need opinion polling to get an understanding of the general public, because...
And journalists need them to fill programmes like this and newspaper
but
columns.
Could I just say something there,
yeah,
Katie? I'm sympathetic to what Lisa had to say about the idea of a moratorium on publication of polls, is what I would put, rather than banning them, in the same way as the broadcast moratorium, to allow people a bit of silence to reflect. But I don't see how it can be done in the modern era. It used to be done in France for years, and Michael Noonan proposed legislation on this almost 20 years ago, a series of by-elections in Tipperary, South Tipperary, and it turned out to be completely impossible. But in the era of social media, that information is going to go around. There is no way of stopping that.
And then, of course, there is the infamous private poll that is leaked at a very opportune moment in the last week or two of an election, giving one or other candidate.
I think it's worth adding that most polls, I didn't do one within the final 2 weeks anyway. So I don't think the polling companies are looking for that. But okay. I think there is an argument to be had about what is its relevance within politics and how much it kind of over-influence things.
OK, we'll no doubt have those arguments again, but I'm going to have to leave that one there and take a break. But stay with us, because we still have much to discuss before the top of the hour.